You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Welcome. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Those are the sounds of people protesting the words of Los Angeles City Council member Nury Martinez outside of her home last night. Martinez apologized in a statement and announced this morning that she's stepping down as president after the LA Times and Knock LA released audio of racist remarks that she made in a meeting nearly a year ago. Listen to this.
The kid's bouncing off the effing walls on the floor, practically tipping it over. There's nothing you can do to control him.
That's Martinez on tape saying her colleague, Councilman Mike Bonin's black son, was acting, quote, like a monkey. She said it in Spanish there. She's talking to city council members Kevin De Leon and Gil Cedillo and labor leader Ron Herrera. Now, today, another city council member, Marquise Harris Dawson, has called for Martinez's full resignation from the council and the others.
We can't have a city council where every day we go in, there's someone sitting there that called the black child a monkey. It's not tenable. It's inconsistent with the city of Los Angeles. It's not who we want to be. I don't even think it's who she wants us to be.
That was Harris Dawson this morning, apparently calling on all the parties to step down. For their parts, De Leon and Cedillo have released statements apologizing for what was said in that meeting. But aside from Martinez leaving the council presidency, there have been no full resignations. Jan Perry is a former L.A. City Council member and can hopefully give us some perspective on this. Hi, Jan.
Hey, how are you?
Doing all right. And Gustavo Arellano is a columnist with the L.A. Times. The Times, of course, breaking the story. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
So let me start with you, Gustavo. How did the tape come to light? Because I know it was apparently sitting on Reddit for a while. How was it just sitting there and nobody picked up on it if you listen to the words?
That is a good question. Also, who was this mystery Redditor who got suspended? Why was it posted? How did they get in contact with the tape? Remember, in California, you are not allowed to record somebody without their permission. But of course, we as reporters, if we have information that we could go out and publish for the better good, then we could totally do that. So many, many questions to come that with answers that hopefully we'll find.
Thankfully, we have your permission to record you, Gustavo, right now. And I suspect that whoever it was, perhaps was a trusted person in the inner circle, somebody who may have fallen, you know, fallen away from that inner circle. Or
my sister says, actually, my brother says it's a Santo Niño de Atocha, the patron saint of the state of Zacatecas, that Jose Huizar put on his Instagram account right before the feds got him, because Nury Martinez is also from Zacatecas. So I think that's a really good lead. I'm going to pursue it.
All right. Jan Perry, is this the way the city council members talk about one another behind closed doors?
Well, you know, I know they don't all get along. I mean, we didn't all get along when I was on council either, but we tried very hard. I know I always did whatever I had to say. I put it on the record. So, you know, I wasn't that behind closed door person. This is a little different because this is pretty vicious and personal. You know, rule number one, you never go after somebody's family member. And, you know, you go down the list. Mike Bonin and his husband, Sean, are fathers, and their son is black, and they're gay men. And, you know, these comments about black people and also people from Oaxaca. You know, I mean, she just went down the checklist, and I don't understand that. But I'm reminded of a quote from Dr. Angelo, which was, when people show you who they are, believe them. The sad thing is that those perspectives may have had a big hand in way, the way the lines were drawn and redistricting. Even though they had an independent commission, the council still rejected it in the end and tried to change all the hard work of the commission. That was unfortunate. That's what we experienced in 2012, which is why I was fighting so hard, you know, to protect South Los Angeles, which quite frankly is a majority Latino population, because I wanted to make sure people still continued to get resources from downtown into South Los Angeles, but they severed that tie. And it's all about politics and rewarding friends, punishing enemies, and power brokering. And to what end? The community suffers.
Yeah, there certainly is a lot to unpack. I want to get your take on something that Martinez said talking about Councilmember Nithya Raman. And she says, it serves us to not give her all of K-Town, because if you do, that solidifies her renter's district. And that is not a good thing for any of us. You have to keep her on the fence, end quote. What's she talking about there?
I assume what she's talking about is that would be a Councilwoman Raman's natural base, given her political perspective, that she could mobilize those people to make sure she gets reelected. But a lot of council members, I think, believe that when they pull assets into a district, that guarantees them a certain amount of fundraising opportunity. And that's just ridiculous. And quite frankly, that's the kind of stuff that got Huizar into trouble.
Gustavo, your column really takes Martinez to task. I mean, this morning she released, she was certainly more contrite in her apology when she announced she would step down from the presidency. Again, not from her council seat, only from the leadership position. Give us your take on what's happening on this tape. And you wrote in your column yesterday, quote, the worst enemy of Latino power is ourselves. What do you mean by that?
Exactly what it means. It's disgusting. You have these clans, for lack of a better term, these rivalries, fighting over each other, making alliances with other people. You know, there's always a saying among my friends, especially my cousins, like if we Latinos are specifically Mexicans, because with the exception of Kevin De Leon, everyone, Nuri and Ron and Gil are Mexican-Americans. If Mexican-Americans and Mexicans, if we were united among ourselves, oh, we would have so much more success than we do. But since we don't, then the saying in Spanish is, por eso somos como somos. That's why we are the way we are. And in seeing this, remember, these are three of the most powerful politicians in Southern California, period. Nuri, until today, was the president of the LA City Council. Kevin De Leon, former Senate pro tem leader. Gil Cedillo, a legend in immigrant rights, council members, longtime politicos. And they are supposed to be better than the rest of us. They're not supposed to be the cousins from Montebello going off against Black people and Asians, five Budweisers into a carne asada in a backyard on Saturday. No, they're supposed to be better than us. They're supposed to be setting the example. That they're not setting the example is just, it's sad. It's disgusting. You know, so many of my cousins, because they're good people, they're outraged at this. It's disgusting.
I mean, the vitriol, though, is striking. I mean, at one point on the tape, Martinez says of Mike Bonin, her fellow council member, quote, Bonin thinks he's effing Black. How deeply, Gustavo, do you think that the personal and the political divisions run between Latino and Black Angelenos and the people who represent them?
Not as much as this makes it out to seem. Here you have three examples, but then you take someone like Antonio Villaraigosa, a longtime ally with Black politicians. You have Karen Bass herself, you know, longtime ally with like people like Maria Elena Durazo or whatnot. Antonio's a former mayor. Karen's running for mayor. They are not in political power right now. What you have for political power are these three people. And you said it's vitriolic. I wouldn't call it vitriolic. I would call it casual. That's what makes it even more disturbing. It's the casualness of their conversation. You know, Bonin is one thing. That's personal that he's going after that, but casually ridiculing Oaxacans. Literally, Nuri saying, "Tan feos," and emphasized on the feos, saying they're ugly. And cackling, as people are saying, like, oh, yeah, now they have shoes. Like, just the casualness of their classism, their racism, and, of course, the comments they're making about a Black boy is just, it's vile. It's vile. But it's even more vile, again, because it's so casual, so easily done.
Jan Perry, Nuri Martinez has stepped down as the president of the city council. Where do you see this going? Do you think she will eventually step down from the council as well? Do you think these others? I mean, Gil Cedillo already got voted out of office. But what about Kevin De Leon, who, by the way, just ran for mayor?
Well, I think it's about the voters, and the voters have to decide. The people in their districts have to decide how they feel about this, and they need to let their feelings be known out there, out loud. Do they want to retain these people? Because if they step down before their term ends, then you have to have a special election, and that's going to cost us more money because of the things that they said that were so harmful. So then there's an extra kick there. Not only did they say these things, then you got to pay for it. So let's hear from the people who live in these districts and see what they want.
You know, I'm curious, Jan, we're not hearing folks talking about whether this tape might be the first of many, that there may be other tapes out there as well. Do you think there may be other tapes?
Yeah, well, you know, I wonder, like, first of all, who made this tape? Because they were pretty far inside of an office. So obviously it's somebody in the inside of their organization or something. And why they would make this tape would be very interesting to know. And who benefits? Who is harmed? Well, I think that's pretty clear. And then who is the beneficiary of this?
Gustavo?
That is the million-dollar question. There's a lot of speculation. Ari said who I think recorded the tape. No one's going to believe me, but hey, there could be miracles. This was someone, if you read the original Reddit post, I never read it, but the way it was quoted, it was someone who was saying, like, I'm paraphrasing here, that you always hear about this stuff going on, but it's quite another thing to say it. But they seem to have a personal animus towards labor specifically, this idea that labor runs Los Angeles. So if I had to speculate, it's someone within the labor Fed who maybe was part of the labor movement, somehow got this tape and is now disgusted with it. And so I think their bigger thing, yes, they want to embarrass Nuri Gill and Kevin, but what they really wanted to show was that this is how politics run in Los Angeles. It goes through the labor office, because a lot of the conversation was Ron saying, we need to do this. We need to run this person. This is how we do it. That person's not good. It's very much like LA Confidential. You do this, you do that. This is how we run the city.
Jan Perry, who's going to be the next president of the city council?
I hope the next president will be circumspect, will be fair, will be transparent and do what they do on the record and not try to broker power or aggregate power for the sake of power and forget why you went there in the first place, which is to serve the people of Los Angeles. So I don't know the answer to that, but the next time they better get it right.
Gustavo, you want to wrap it up?
Yeah, I mean, Marquise, maybe Curran Price. Look, if you want to talk about what a better Los Angeles can be like, you're seeing it in South LA, where you do, yes, these are historic black districts, now Latino majority, still have Latino council members who have Latino staff. I actually talked a little bit about Curran's staff, mostly Central Americans who grew up in Los Angeles. Let's have the future of LA. Let's have a great LA of what LA already is. Let's not have the LA of the past where everyone's fighting with each other. So it remains to be seen.
Gustavo Arellano, columnist for the LA Times, a regular, of course, here on GLA. Jan Perry, former LA city council person. Thank you so much to you both for coming on. We appreciate it.
Gracias.
Yeah, well, I want to say thank you for having such a direct and blunt conversation, because this topic of racism needs to be put out here on the table, and people need to understand it not only hurts you, this is not the way to govern. And, you know, it'll hit your pocketbook eventually.
All right. Coming up, Metro's got a new rail line that'll serve a cross-section of South Los Angeles. Next stop, LAX in a couple of years. But, how are the folks who live around it thinking about it? That's yours in a moment.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
More of Greater LA Now from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. This past weekend, after 8 years of construction, there's a new light rail line in South Los Angeles that has finally opened.
This train's final destination is Expo Crenshaw Station.
Please stand clear.
The more than $2 billion K-Line train serves historically black communities of LA, like Crenshaw, Leimert Park, and Hyde Park, as well as the city of Inglewood. Well, Saul Gonzalez, the co-host of KQED's The California Report, who's gone to his share of mass transit grand openings here in L.A., was at the unveiling of the K-Line, and he joins us right now. Hey, Saul.
Hey, Steve.
This is the K line, of course. It's the Crenshaw line. I think it was known earlier before the renaming of the lines, but it is the K line. And it's been close to a decade, Saul, since a new light rail line opened here in L.A. Why is the new K line significant?
Well, first off, let's just acknowledge this sucker has been in the works for years and years and years. I mean, planning for it goes back to the 1980s, the early 1990s. It really became a matter of civic focus after the 1992 civil unrest slash riots. I think a lot of political leaders and community leaders felt that there just wasn't enough transportation equity, social equity, economic equity in South Los Angeles. And this line is really important symbolically as an expression of, we want to serve the transportation needs of working class and poor communities in what is a largely Black and Latino area of the city. But it also has, you know, a very practical transportation purpose, which is a major expansion of our growing light rail system and a way to connect these communities of Leimert and Crenshaw and Hyde Park to the wider civic network of rail that's been going in over the last 20, 30 years or so. And I talked about the transportation needs of those communities with one rider. She was writing it on the day after it opened. Here's what Michelle Galarza had to tell me.
I think it's great for this community, especially because you got to take the bus and sometimes it's kind of, you know, crazy on the bus. Maybe this will take a straight shot to work. I'll get there in half the time also. And, you know, waiting for buses and sometimes I come out late. And it's kind of, you know, dangerous around here. And this kind of helps us.
So you're hoping this is a real transportation difference for
you? Yes, exactly. And, you know, with the gas prices, I would much rather take this.
All right, Saul, but, I mean, who's going to ride this train? I mean, ridership, we know, has been down a lot in the system overall, certainly since the pandemic. Who's going to be on this train, and where's it going to eventually go?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I mean, we are in this world coming out of the pandemic. We all know that mass transit ridership plummeted during the pandemic. It is slowly coming back, but it's nowhere near where it was, say, 3 years ago. So that's a big question. Who's going to ride it immediately? Likely the people who can use it. People like Michelle, who have to get to work right now. They're not working from home. They have to be in physical offices or workplaces. Students will ride it. But ultimately, the big expansion is expected in about 2 years, in 2024, when this line connects to stations at LAX. And I think the thinking is that that'll really supercharge ridership on this line. This line will connect to LAX, you know, long this dream, right, of people going to and from the airport. What if I could find some other way to get there other than my car? And this is the way to do it. So I think that is the big dream for the future. But it's a dream that's a couple of years off because those stations and this line isn't completely done yet. There are 9 stations in total, but only 7 of them are now operational. But I talked about that LAX dream of riding rail to LAX with Des Ruggles. He was riding the train on a lark when I met him, but he thinks he can ride it a lot once it does connect to LAX. Here's what he told me.
Not until probably at least 2024 when the LAX connection happens. But if like, hey,
that's what's really important. In
yes,
terms
that
of
is the that is probably the most important thing for me and probably a lot of LA people.
Saul, you mentioned that there are 9 stops on the line, 7 of them open now. I mean, what's the work left to do? Just those 2 stops? And obviously there's a big construction heap going on at LAX, right?
Yeah, you know, we talked about those 2 stations at or near LAX, which are coming online in a couple of years. But there's still like a lot of track work they're considering doing. They may raise part of the track so it's over, you know, particular streets. So even in places where it looks done, it may not be completely done. And really the big goal here, Steve, is to have this line and so many other lines completely done by the 2028 Summer Olympic Games here in L.A.
Wasn't this supposed to open years ago when it was called the Crenshaw Line? What happened? What delayed all of that?
Well, what happened, Steve, is what happens to so many big infrastructure projects in L.A. and in California and in the United States. You know, it went over initial cost estimates by about $90 million in the case of the K line. And then it went over construction targets. This was supposed to be finished 3 years ago in 2019. They had a lot of construction issues come up, some of them self-inflicted, a lot of elements they just weren't prepared to put in on time. And then the pandemic happened, right? And people people weren't showing up for work. So it really slowed down construction massively. Now, looking ahead, the hope is that, hey, if this is a success and people start riding this K line, that will all be forgotten. That will be in the rear view mirror and people will forget about just how long it took to make this line possible.
You mentioned the word hope, though. There are fears from people along the line because all this construction and the delays, Saul, right, have really affected their business because, you know, people haven't been able to park. Things have been sort of moved around, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember when they were constructing the K line, you know, a lot of it is subterranean. So they really just tore up streets along Crenshaw to get this built. And that went on month after month after month. It really affected merchants there. Related to that issue, Steve, is these concerns and hopes, right, as to how it changes the neighborhood. Will this be a train for gentrification? Will this affect property costs, rental costs in the neighborhood, community character? As you said in the opening, this is going through historically and proudly Black neighborhoods of Los Angeles. And Steve, I talked about some of these neighborhood hopes and anxieties in Leimert Park with a gentleman named Kahumba. He's a longtime fixture of the Leimert Park neighborhood. And here's part of our conversation.
Do you think it's popular in the neighborhood?
No, it's not.
Why is that?
Because they feel like it's a takeover thing. They feel like the white people are coming down and taking over the neighborhood. But the neighborhood was deteriorating. I've been down here over 20-something years, and I've seen it deteriorate. It's getting really bad. So the train is going to bring in new people. It's going to bring in more income to the neighborhood. It's gonna change things for the better, I believe. I don't think it's going to change it for the worse.
And, you know, let's not forget Inglewood. It's a big piece of this as well. The K-Line goes right through Inglewood, and it's hoped and it's feared, depending on what you think about the K-Line, that it will cause more development to happen there in Inglewood, particularly as they find a way to connect this line to SoFi Stadium and to this kind of Inglewood economic renaissance that's happening around the stadium.
We know where it's going west, right? It will ultimately end at LAX or very close to LAX. What about the other direction? Are there plans in the other direction?
Well, yes, there are plans looking way over the horizon to eventually have a northern spur of the K line. I don't know if that will be called the K line, but basically a northern spur that will take the rail in as far north as West Hollywood. So the neighborhoods between the Crenshaw neighborhood and West Hollywood. And then short of that, Steve, there are just so many other rail and subway projects coming online. I mean, the next few months, there'll be new subway stations that will open up near Grand Central Market, downtown and Little Tokyo. There's the Wilshire subway line that its construction continues west to Fairfax and Wilshire right now. And then in the San Gabriel Valleys, there's the extension of the Gold Line much further to the east. So a lot of light rail and subway activity happening in and around Southern California.
Saul Gonzalez, host of KQED's The California Report, reporting for us today. Saul, thanks.
Hey, thank you, Steve. Nice talking rail with you.
Always nice, Saul. That is all the time that we have for today. Tomorrow, the history of multifamily housing in LA. And a new book by our friend Francis Anderton looks at the community building value of common spaces in apartment buildings and garden apartments and bungalow courts. That's tomorrow on Greater LA. Share your thoughts with us, even a story idea, at kcrw.com/GLA. Subscribe to the podcast, too. It's an easy thing to do. You can find it, of course, wherever you get your podcasts by searching KCRW Greater LA. And thank you for doing that. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Phil Richards, John Meek, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all made the show happen this evening. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great night.